Hey there, folks. It's Brock. I am back from Boston, and I have plenty of interviews to share with you. This is Boston Month. It's January 2015. So here is number one in the series. This is with Susan McLucas, who runs the Bicycle Riding School in Somerville, Massachusetts. And she teaches people who do not know how to ride bikes how to ride bikes, which is pretty awesome. It's a noble endeavor. I met with her at her house in Somerville, and she showed me around her garage a little bit, and then we went into her kitchen and sat down where she lives with a bunch of other folks. It's a sweet little co-housing situation, and very well organized. Everyone does their chores. As such, you may hear some folks circulating through the background, running water or putting things on the counter or whatnot. But yes, this is a lovely interview with Susan McLucas. She is a sweetheart, a lovely person. And as a 65-year-old person, she's been doing this for 30 years. So that's something to respect and something to love. Anyways, here is my conversation with Susan McLucas of the Bicycle Riding School in Somerville, Massachusetts.
All right.
So Jeremy was telling you about learning to ride.
Yeah, yeah. And it was one of those things. I think he was the first... well, let's see. First of all, my wife is from Boston, or grew up here in the area. And I think when I visited her in 2007, I was looking for bike shops and things. Mm-hmm. And I believe your Red Barn here was one of the ones that came up on my search.
Hmm.
And I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Uh-huh.
And
as
so
a
then,
place to fix bikes?
I think at that point I was looking for a bike shop, yeah.
Uh-huh, and it came up, yeah. I started out as a bike shop before I was a bike school.
Okay. And so did you give up the bike shop before you started teaching people how to ride?
It was sort of a gradual transition.
Okay.
I started teaching people as a sideline, and it just got to be more and more.
Yeah.
And then now there's no reason to fix dirty old bikes in a lonesome garage when I can be teaching people.
I mean, yeah, they're both need to be done, and it seems like that's the best choice. So when did you start teaching people to ride?
Gee, it must be almost 30 years ago.
Okay.
And it was just, you know, a couple of people, and then put up a little 4x6 card, and maybe in my first year I taught a dozen people.
Okay. So 30 years ago.
So, yeah, started teaching people just one by one. And the place I was working at that time calls itself a bicycle school, but they teach people how to fix bikes.
Is this the Cambridge Bicycle School?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's been around for a while.
Broadway Bicycle School.
Broadway, that's it.
Yeah. And they actually thought it was kind of a silly idea to teach people to ride, because they couldn't imagine anyone not knowing how to ride.
So I'm curious, how did that need become evident?
Well, I had two friends who didn't know how to ride, so it seemed like if there were two people in my small circle of friends, there would be more people, and it was
odds
a lot
are.
Of fun.
Yeah.
I couldn't know the only two people in Boston didn't know how to ride. And so I just thought, I'll see how many people need it, and got to be pretty, just the more I did it, the better I got at it. I had probably taught six or eight people when my sister sent me an article about a guy in the Midwest who taught people to ride through a rec department of a county. And I wish I still had this article, but who knows where it is. But anyhow, he took the pedals off. And as soon as I heard that, I said, oh, why didn't I think of that? Because that is really the key to success.
That's how you find your balance?
Yeah. Because if you're trying to get your balance and the pedals are on, then you're always hitting your ankles on the pedals.
Sure. And so
it's no fun.
For children these days, the balance bikes become kind of an institution, but was that the case at that point in history, or was it...
No, I had never heard of one. There may have been some. I think they started out in Scandinavia, maybe, or someplace over in Europe.
Certainly not in the U.S.
We didn't know about them, but they're the key to success, really.
Right.
Kids who spend, you know, some time on those just don't really have to learn how to ride a bike. I had a intergenerational class last year sometime, and a mother called me up and said she wanted to join. She needed a little extra practice, but she could basically ride, but not very good at going straight. But her three-year-old son, she wanted him to learn to ride. And I said, whoa, three, that's kind of young. And she said, well, he's been on his balance bike for a year, and he does great on that. So I said, well, if you want to try it, we can. And sure enough, he turned out to be the one who got his balance first out of the whole group, except for his mom, who already really didn't know how to ride.
Okay.
So he was there encouraging the 35-year-old other mom.
Yeah.
You can do it. Just keep trying. He's the cutest thing. He could barely talk. And he's...
That's great.
Urging so, on the others.
I'm assuming you learned to ride as a child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Your time.
You must have had to reverse engineer the... The process?
Well, I can't really remember how I learned, except my brother does remember, and so my dad is likely to have used the same method,
okay.
Which is the typical thing of holding on and then not telling the kid when you stop holding on.
Right, and then all of a sudden you're out there on your own.
Ah! But,
And that's less practical when you're working with adults, right?
Yeah, you really can't hold, you know, they're too big to hold up.
Yeah.
And I've never... There's a little bit of a, you know, there's a little bit of trickery involved in that,
uh-huh.
And I don't like that. I'd rather, you know, okay.
Want to be straight up with people.
Yeah, you know, you're on your own, and so I just tell, I have people on a bike that's low enough that if they start to fall over, they can just put their foot down, catch themselves, and very rarely do people fall over in my classes.
Okay.
Although most of them think they're going to be falling all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I gear them up with elbow pads and knee pads and gloves, and I even made some ankle pads for the people who are especially nervous or if they hit their ankle and want to be sure it doesn't happen again. And, of course, helmets.
Right, right.
So, from all the gear, they get the feeling that they're going to be falling all the time, but then they realize, you know, I've never fallen. Maybe I don't need all this stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of times by graduation, people will... Leave the gear here.
I was thinking that I take for granted very much. I was thinking about that on the way over here. Like, you know, this is just a skill that I've been doing for so long that I take for granted the fact that I have it. So how would you describe, I mean, people seem, they must be tenuous. They must be nervous when they first begin to ride.
They're very nervous about it. And they're ashamed and, you know, they have all these issues around it because it's just such a basic thing. You know, people take it for granted, and then if you don't do it, you feel like a real freak.
I'd imagine you would have to be very emotionally sensitive as well. Because you're dealing with, this is not just like, I can't do this, but this is a thing that most people know how to do.
Right.
Where do people miss that along the way? Is it just the fact that maybe they didn't have a bike growing up as a kid? Economic reasons?
It's all kinds of things, yeah. There are people who just were too poor, or grew up in a really busy city where there was no space. A lot of places it's not considered ladylike. You know, people from the Caribbean islands tell me that girls weren't supposed to ride and uh-huh. women ride in Haiti or wherever.
Yeah.
And some kids were sickly or just very studious. I taught a Harvard law professor, Lawrence Tribe, and he said when he was young, he was just reading history books and, you know, inside, and they were living in strange places anyhow, so it was a little bit, I don't know if it was intimidating outside, but his parents were happy with him just staying inside, and,
yeah.
You know, he was really smart and just getting smarter, and then he realized, you know, there's more to life than being a professor, and...
Strange as it may seem.
That's right. But and then overprotective parents are a big reason.
Like we don't want to put people in harm's way. So
right,
bicycles are dangerous.
Just keep them safe right from the start.
And some of that could go with what you were saying about the big city. Like, you know, if you have a toddler on, I don't know, say the streets of downtown Boston, that's not a good place for them to ride.
Right. You definitely don't want, you know, kids in the street too soon. I had a 50-year-old student one time who was telling me that his mom was overprotective. And as we were walking over to the schoolyard, sure enough, she called him up, son, don't do it. You're going to get hurt.
at 50 years old, still listening to the mother saying, no, this bicycle is dangerous.
He listened to her, but he said, Mom, you can't stop me now. I'm going to do it. I'm going to be fine. Don't worry.
And you wonder if she had a bad experience with a bicycle sometime back in the day.
Yeah, probably did. But anyhow.
Yeah.
So I told that to a kid, and he loved it, and he kept thinking, Mom, you can't stop me now. And the mom said, now that only applies to a 50-year-old. When you're 7, you can't say that.
At that point, you have a responsibility to maintain the contract between parent and child.
Really?
Yeah.
But
mentioned when we were looking at the photo board, you start people out. You've got a borrower fleet here. You've got bikes that people can ride.
Yeah,
and you start at a schoolyard that's not too far from here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, we can go over there if you want.
Sure.
I'll show it to you. But it's a perfect place. About 3,000 people have learned there so far.
Yeah.
It's got a gentle slope so that if you give yourself a nice push, you'll just keep going for quite a while without having to, keep the pushing going.
Okay.
And then people just walk back up the hill. And as soon as they can go down the hill 3 times without putting their feet on the ground, I give them pedals if they want them.
Okay.
Sometimes they want to get a little more practice, and that can work too.
Yeah.
But
that's about the point at which someone feels comfortable.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good rule. And most people get that in the first class, but some people go 10 classes before they get it.
Yeah.
And, if you're just not used to doing athletic things or you have some kind of special challenge. I'm working with a woman who was traumatized as a kid now, and she's having a harder time, but she's getting it.
And it sounds like you're putting each student down their own track, like you're not expecting everyone to graduate to the next level of competency at once.
In a given, you just, see when it happens.
And,
I've been thinking of how I could structure my classes when I do groups where it's more geared to show that we expect the difference in, ability or difference in how fast people get it. Right now I have 4 classes, and the first 2 are at the schoolyard and the second 2 are at the bike path.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe about half the people have to come in extra. Either they, if it's a weekly class, they find a time to come in between classes. Or sometimes if the schedule that the class is about all the time they have for it, they just switch to the next, a future class so that they can have, more time at the schoolyard. But what would be really best would be to have it set up where you have 2 classes at the schoolyard, and then you have more classes at the schoolyard planned in that original schedule, and for the people who are ready, they go to the bike path.
Yeah.
But when I'm at the height of the season, the slots in the weekend are so valuable, I haven't figured out how to do that.
And you can only be in one place at once, so.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, but I do have a second teacher who helps out when I get too busy. I funnel all of the road riding people to PADA. We don't get nearly as many road riding people. I'm not quite sure why. A lot of people, like Mass Bike, only does street riding. And
Mass Bike is the advocacy organization, and so they do training for how to ride with traffic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But also not how to actually ride a bike.
No. Very rarely they'll have a one-time class doing that, which isn't really enough. Some people get it. But they're in touch with me, so if they have people that are really not quite up and running at the end of the one-time thing, they send them over to me, and
okay.
I finish it off.
I was curious, maybe it's an unfair question because there are probably many aspects to like, but what do you like about teaching someone to ride for the first time?
Well, I like that it's something that a lot of people have a big complex about or a lot of shame around, and it's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And usually all it takes is 6 or 8 hours and it's gone.
Yeah.
And they just feel like $1 million. So it's a way of doing therapy in a very practical way.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to sit around and say, you're okay, it's fine. You're just like, okay, get rid of that problem.
That's a way to do it that's not insensitive too, I suppose.
Yeah. And plus, I like bikes. I don't like how many cars there are in the city. Mm-hmm. And the way we're, you know, using up all the oil and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. They're expensive. They're bad for your health. They take up so much space in the city. And so the more people I can get on bikes, I feel like I'm helping to bring the new age into being. And so it's good societally, it's good environmentally, and it's good for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Both
yeah.
psychologically and health-wise and everything.
Lots to like.
So it's a really practical thing that has far-reaching implications, both for the people and for the larger group. So
yeah. Bicycle for you is a political and a philosophical thing.
Kind of,
it
yeah.
seems, yeah. For me too, as well. Uh-huh. What do you see? What would be one of the maybe the most significant changes in your area for people getting around by bike?
In the last few years, what's changed?
Or like, what are you hoping for soon?
Oh, well, more bike paths, more bike lanes. Which is happening. It just needs to happen faster.
Mm-hmm.
And just the more people that ride, the more everybody, all the drivers take bikes into account just naturally, because it's not like you occasionally run into a bike. They're just bikes as part of the traffic flow, and so you're always thinking of them. And it's been fun to see that change already happen. I remember when I was young, we used to, like during bike week and so forth, we'd talk about how, you know, in the future there would be many more bikes. But really, in my heart of hearts, I don't think I believed it. You got to put your vision out there, and, you know, we were talking about it because you got to. But when I actually started seeing more bikes, I'm like, oh my goodness, it's really happening.
It's actually happening.
People are, you know, I'm not the only one that yeah. thinks this way.
What was Bike Week?
It's just a way to promote bicycles.
So like a kind of a commute to work sort of week. Everyone does it. Everyone tries it out.
Right.
That's the idea.
Yeah. And it's gotten to be mostly done by cities now. But back 30 years ago, it was an environmental group I was part of called Earthworks that ran Bike Week.
Okay.
And we also planted fruit in public places and
yeah.
stuff like that.
I do love public fruit.
Uh-huh.
It's one of my favorites.
Cool.
Yeah, so you've seen a lot of things change. You've been here
yeah.
since about 30 years ago?
About 30 years, yeah. Not yeah. quite, but almost.
Because I remember even, well, again, 2007 is when I first visited Medford and Somerville.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I remember it seemed far more treacherous and far less expected that you would mm-hmm. get around using a bicycle mm-hmm. than it does now. So how has the change, how do you see that over the past 30 years?
I'm not sure, but I feel like it's been in the last 10 years mm-hmm. especially that you can really see the change.
Mm-hmm.
As far as I was aware of, it was kind of holding steady for the first, you know, 20 years or so that I was here. And now you really, sometimes I notice, you know, gee, there are 3 bikes and 1 car here that I can see. And I'm like, yay!
Yeah.
We're getting somewhere.
For sure.
And I'm often part of the bike census.
Okay.
Which used to be done by the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, and now is done. They may still do it, but the most recent census that I was part of was done by Somerville.
Okay, so you're counting how many bicycles you see on a given day
mm-hmm.
in a given place?
And pedestrians.
Okay.
So it's a little bit of a challenge. You've got to say, you know, who's coming this way, turning that way. Yeah. And if you were just counting bikes, it'd be easy, but you're trying to count pedestrians too. And they're going slower, and so, okay, there's this clump of five here, and now I'm count a couple of bikes, now they're there. Is that the same people? I think so. Let's see. But anyhow, if you're off by a couple, it's not the end of the world.
That's an incredibly, you have to be very good at your job, I suppose, to be doing that.
But every year that we count, there are more bikes. Mm-hmm. And actually, that was true back when I was doing this 30 years ago with the MAPC. They would tell us every year there are more. So it may be that I just didn't notice it until it got to a point. But I think it's been a gradual, steady increase in biking. And it's been... you know, you see the kinds of bikes people are riding changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a very nice kind of a step-through frame down there outside. Mm-hmm. And it's also got three chain rings in front, which mm-hmm. Is more than I'm used to seeing on that style of frame.
Hmm, interesting.
It's a classy ride.
Yeah, it's a very classy ride. But most hybrids like that have three chain rings these days.
All right.
I'm not sure how long that's been true.
It's been a while since I've looked at them up close.
I remember maybe about 10 years ago or so, somebody was suggesting an open frame for me, and I said, I'm not handicapped, I'm not elderly. And then I just sort of stepped through, and I said, boy, but that is pretty comfy.
My, isn't that convenient. I
said, well, what the heck? And now I would never ride anything else. And it is true that bike frames are stronger when they have the top tube.
Mm-hmm.
But how often do you break a bike frame?
Right, not too often. I only break bike frames because I use them far more aggressively and far more often than they were designed to be used. So,
right, yeah. Jumping off ramps and so forth.
I'm not a trick rider, but I do like to go touring, and that has its own set of strains.
Huh.
I think I broke two different Schwinn frames.
Wow.
Over about 2 years,
just
by traveling and riding far. And they were great bikes.
How far do you go?
I enjoy it whenever I can get out and whenever I can do it. My wife and I do some weekend tours, but last summer we did a 7-week from Portland out to Glacier National Park and then kind of back through
pretty nice.
The Northwest. Oh, yeah.
She's a big biker, too.
She is. And I'm lucky to have met her because... I didn't know how to camp until I met her. Like, I didn't have any special gear or anything like that. And she wasn't particularly adept at bicycling. I mean, she did it, but I feel like we both kind of developed those things together and then ended up going and traveling together. So
that's really fun.
Yeah, it was the best of both worlds.
Cool.
the T station over here, I noticed, has just put in a locked bike area.
Uh-huh. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. How new is that?
Maybe a couple of years, I would guess.
Okay.
It's not brand new, but it's pretty new.
Because I haven't seen that for a while. That's it's a cage that's accessed with a transit card, and you can store your bike there, as opposed to leaving it out to the elements or I suppose thieves.
Right, although I've never had any trouble getting a bike stolen. In fact, if I'm late, I'll just leave my bike without locking it up.
Is that right?
No one ever takes it. One time I just did an experiment. I bought a new bike, and I said, I'm just going to see how long it takes it to get stolen if I never lock it up.
Mm-hmm.
And it was way over 6 months.
Really?
Leaving it all day in Harvard Square, Square, out in public.
Huh.
And it just gave me the warmest feeling when I would come back and think, probably thousands of people have walked by this.
Right.
And, good number have noticed that it's not locked up, and they said, well, it's not mine. Wouldn't want to take it from the nice person whose bike it is.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I feel like that goes far counter to what we're taught as far as, if you don't lock your bike, it's going to be stolen.
Immediately.
And it could happen.
And it can happen. And so, occasionally I have a bike stolen and I can't get too upset about it because, I haven't listened to all the people that say, you should lock your bike up more.
Yeah.
So... I have to at least pretend I'm totally unconcerned.
right. Yeah, that's very interesting. In Portland, Oregon is where I'm from. Mm-hmm. We have, right now, there's a really big focus on bike theft. And there's a lot of it happening.
Mm-hmm.
But it is interesting, I think, maybe what the perceived danger is versus the actual danger.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of luck of the draw. You know, I've talked to people who say they got two bikes stolen, you know, right after the one after the other.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy, that's bad luck.
It's hard to bounce back from.
Yeah, it's hard to say, okay, I'll just buy a bike whenever it gets stolen.
Yeah.
It's every other week. But I've had good luck.
Well, how would people find you if they wanted to learn themselves how to ride a bike, or if they knew someone who needed to?
If you Google bike lessons or learn to ride a bike or anything like that, I'm one of the first things that comes up.
All right.
And my website is bicycleridingschool.org.
There we go.
Making it sound like a nonprofit, which it really isn't, but it's kind of running the spirit of a nonprofit.
There we go. You're not getting ridiculously rich.
I'm not getting rich. And I have a sliding scale, so
yeah,
people can pay what's comfortable for them. And sometimes people pay me more because they say, oh, this is too little here. Take an extra $20.
This is far more valuable.
Right. If you insist, I'll take more. And then it's great because occasionally I have students who can't afford, you know, even the bottom of the scale. Mm-hmm. And so I say, well, what the heck, you know.
Right.
I don't really need to get paid for every single hour that I work.
Sure.
Lots of times I have a bunch of people each giving me $30, and so it gives me a little leeway.
Yeah. So people should be generous if they can.
Seems like they are. I have a sliding scale, and I average way toward the top of the sliding scale.
That's excellent.
You know, people are invited to pay whatever they want between $25 and $60 for a private lesson of an hour and a half. And I probably average 50.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So I think it's pretty nice. A lot of people assume, well, everybody would pay you 25 if you tell them, you know, pay what you want. And that's not the way it works.
Right, right.
Everybody is so happy. You can't believe how happy people leave.
Definitely.
It's one of the things that makes it so fun.
You've had a few peppered through the time we've been talking, and a bunch of folk or pictures of satisfied people on the board out in the garage. But are there stories that stick out to you in particular that make you say that this is why I do this?
Well, let's see. I can remember a woman who came from Dallas a few years back. She had heard about me and couldn't find anybody close to her teaching, so she came to Boston with her husband and son and learned how to ride. She was so excited. And then she was always trying to get me to come to Dallas and visit her because, you know, she wanted to keep up the friendship. And she said, there must be tons of people in Dallas who don't know how to ride. And I said, well, I would love to see you, but really the only time I can imagine coming to Dallas would be if I could teach some people and it were close to the Kennedy assassination conference every November 22nd. And sure enough, one October, I had a woman write from Dallas who did not want to come to Boston. So I wrote Mary and I said, are you still interested in having me come visit you? And she said, oh, sure. So she put a couple of articles in her local papers, the Bicycle Whisperers coming to town. And sure enough, signed up three more people, two kids and another adult.
Oh, nice.
So in 2 days, I taught those people how to ride. And then I went to the conference, had a great time. And one night while I was staying there, she invited over her friend, the librarian, who found the bicycle school for her.
Uh-huh.
And she was telling me how much this meant to her. She said when Mary came back from Boston, she was like walking on air. She couldn't believe how happy she was. And you know, I could see it. She had told me, you know, she'd written this effusive thank you letter about how it was like walking into a magical realm. And so But that's typical. People just, you know, I get postcards from people taking their first bike trip in Nova Scotia saying, you know, it's just opened up new worlds for them. And let's see, it's often the people who have the most trouble who I have the fondest memories of.
Uh-huh.
You know, I spend a lot of time with them and we bond. And there was one old guy, I think he was 74 when he came to me, and he was not especially athletic, and he didn't start pedaling until maybe the 8th or 10th lesson. And then he could go in right-hand circles, but he couldn't go left for the longest time.
Yeah.
He just kept trying, and it wasn't working. I developed a new technique for him. I said, is it okay with you if I just push on your side ever so gently? So he was either going to fall over or,
or he's
actually
gonna figure
turn
it out.
Left. And he said, okay, very gently. So I would, you know, warn him I was going to do it and pushed a little bit. And sure enough, that worked, got him going left. And then after he had broken through the barrier of going left, he could do it on his own. And he had about, I think, 28 lessons or so. But he was riding on the path, not running into anybody, passing people, you know, looking back before he passed. And he was so thrilled.
That's excellent.
Yeah. So it's the older people tend to get all the more excited about it.
I would imagine. Well, if you have more time to watch everyone else riding a bike and not doing it yourself,
sitting on the park bench while everybody else goes out, or just, you know, not even being out there. And lots of times fat people have a little extra challenge.
Sure.
And I have a bike that's suited for fat people. It's a Townie.
Okay.
It's a pedal forward bike. So the pedals are maybe 8 inches forward compared to the usual position.
Oh, I see.
So people can be low enough that they can get their feet on the ground without having to bend their legs as much as you would in a regular bike, because if you're really fat, you really can't bend your leg that far.
I see.
And for the longest time, I thought those were the bikes for everybody who was having trouble. And then the people down at Ace Wheelworks told me that Specialized had made its version, or its answer to the Townie, is how the people at Ace explained this bike, the Specialized Expedition.
Mm-hmm.
It's just more gradually, you know, the seat is leaning back toward, compared to the pedals.
Okay.
But it's a more subtle angle, and the front wheel is a little bit more forward than usual compared to the handlebars, and it's just a really stable feeling bike.
I see.
And but there were a number of people who'd been learning on the Townie, and as soon as they tried the Expedition, they said, this is easier to ride.
This is the bike, yeah.
And so since it's more like a normal bike, in fact, it's, you know, it's basically, it's, you know, it's within the realm of normal bikes. It's just a little bit more laid back. I figured just keep the Townie for when people need it. But if people just try and try and they can't get their foot up on the second pedal, then I bring the Townie in, and it's usually because they're heavy.
Right.
And
well, and that's one of the problems with obesity is that you want to probably, as someone with a problem with weight, you want to be able to ride and exercise and try to work some of it off, but it becomes exponentially difficult as somebody gains weight. So
that's right.
Yeah.
So
it's good that you found a solution.
Yeah. It doesn't make it downright easy, but it makes it easier.
Yeah.
And, I only have about 1 in 400 people who don't succeed in learning to ride.
I was curious, if there's anybody that tosses in the towel before they...
Virtually 100%, but not everybody. Mm-hmm. And most of them have been really fat.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard thing to get around if you're just a certain, you know, if you're heavy enough, then it's just too hard to move.
Sure, yeah.
But I still believe that if they had stuck with it longer, they would have gotten it.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the people in my first 10 or 15 years who didn't learn to ride, I bet if I'd had the fleet I have now, I could have gotten them riding. Because it used to be I was operating on a shoestring.
Right.
And, you know, my fleet was some bikes that I had found and fixed up or someone had donated. And you would think that three speeds would be comfy and easy to ride, but actually, at one point I had two people who couldn't ride a certain three speed,
mm-hmm.
and that was when I got my first mountain bike and my first new bike, and I changed the handlebars right away because mountain bikes are kind of leaning over, but I just kind of banished that bike.
Okay.
There were two people who didn't learn on it. Like, that's too much.
This one is cursed.
Yeah, this is a bad bike.
Yeah.
And now most of my fleet is new.
Okay.
And I just, you know, every year I'll buy a couple new bikes.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, I've got to find more space, or I just have to stop buying bikes or get rid of some of the old ones or something because they're taking over.
Yeah. And you do have an impressive space, so that's a fairly large fleet.
Yeah, but I have a similar number downstairs,
too. Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Those, all the newer ones are and the ones I use most of the time are out there, and the ones that are mostly the ones I started with and
I
use
see.
When I need an extra one are
yeah.
downstairs. And it's a lot nicer just bringing them out from the barn than up the stairs of the
Definitely.
Basement.
Yeah, my last apartment had a basement storage situation. We'd go up and down it every day.
Mm-hmm.
90 degree turn at the bottom, locked door.
Oh.
It was the worst.
Pain in the neck.
Garages are much nicer.
Yes, garages are really good.
So maybe in closing, what if someone can't send someone they know to you and they want to try and help encourage someone to learn to ride,
mm-hmm.
What would they need to know? What are some of the most important things?
Well, I'll give you the rundown, and also it's written up on my website.
Okay.
It says teach yourself or other teachers. So I do know other teachers around the country, so they may be close enough to one of them to go learn with them. But the basic idea is have a nice upright bike. Have a small enough bike that the person can be sitting on the seat with their feet flat on the ground and even a little bend in their leg. So, pretty small bike. Take the pedals off. Either find a gentle slope or just have the person teaching walk at a regular fast walking speed, pushing them from their lower back. And tell them, whichever way you start to lean, turn the handlebars that way. Don't try to go straight, whatever you do.
Yeah.
And when you can go a long way without putting your feet down that way, then you put the pedals back on and you try pedaling in a high-medium gear.
Mm-hmm.
And once you're going, you sort of follow the bike for a while and then you try to go straight and it just kind of happens little by little.
You pick up the intuition from there.
Don't know how it happens, but you kind of look in the distance and say, okay, I'm going there, and sure enough.
And that's why bicycles are magical.
There. They're magical. Yep.
I suppose, I mean, we've talked about the high stakes emotionally of either mm-hmm. learning to ride or not being able to ride.
Mm-hmm.
What is important to remember as you're encouraging someone? What's helpful, what's not?
Try to rejoice over small
mm-hmm.
Improvements and, you know, small victories. You know, it's great, you're balancing, you went a long way. You know, even if they go 6 feet, it's like, hey, you went 6 feet, that's great. And they're always saying, I'm doing so terrible. And saying, no, you're doing great.
You did 6 feet.
Yeah. You know, next time it'll be 8 feet.
Right.
Because people just feel so bad about it, and that really gets in the way of learning. So you have to keep them happy, and you know, it's not like you're lying to them by telling mm-hmm. them it's great.
Right. It actually is.
It actually is great. And it helps that I just really love it. I don't know why. You would think after 30 years I might be sort of feeling like, you know, I've been there, done that, but
uh-huh.
I think I was born to do this or something.
Yeah.
But I just really love it each time, even though it's quite similar. Everybody's a little different, and just knowing how much it's going to mean to them when mm-hmm. they get it just makes me have infinite patience for it.
One of the things I was thinking of was that outdoor education has a principle called challenge by choice, where you never make somebody do something they're not comfortable with. You never uh-huh. push somebody off of a trust fall or something like that. because that defeats the entire purpose. Is there, do you see any of that coming to play into what you do?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same. Well, for one thing, I ask people if they want pedals when they, mm-hmm. looks to me like they're ready.
Yeah.
I say, you can have them now if you want them. And lots of times people say, let me just get the feeling for this a little bit more. There was one time when I had a woman who was, I think, 85.
Okay.
And it was really her husband's idea that she learn how to ride. She'd been a concert pianist or something, and now that her career was over, she thought, well, I could afford to fall, and, you know, if I hurt my hand, it wouldn't ruin my career at least. But she got to the top of the hill, and he was going to be on one side, I was going to be on the other. So we'll stay right by you. It seemed like it was really safe. But she said, honey, do I have to? Mm-hmm. And he said, no, if you don't want to, let's let it go. So occasionally people just, feel like it's not for them. And I say, that's fine.
Yeah. You have to own whatever it is that you're getting into.
Yeah.
To actually, to do it, to want to do it and to actually do it well. I think, yeah, you have to have a sense of personal desire.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So I guess we're on sort of on the same page with that. And there are occasionally people who whose friends want them to learn, but they mm-hmm. really don't want to, and
right.
you just have to let them go.
Right.
It's got to be them that wants to.
For sure. And you figure that if bicycles are indeed magical someday, perhaps that magic will touch them.
Exactly.
And then they'll be ready.
We'll just hope for the best.
Well, thanks for your time, Susan. I appreciate
it. It's been really fun.
I was going to ask, can I write a donation to the Bicycle Riding School?
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Let's see here.
Well, that's really sweet.
Well, also you gave me batteries. What is today? It's the
28th,
okay. Problem with traveling is I always lose track of
yeah.
completely out of my regular routine.
Right.
There you
Thank
go.
You so
Thank
much.
You so much. Hopefully That's that'll good. Fill in the gaps for someone who couldn't afford it or something like that. But.
Exactly. Well, I've got this traumatized woman who's kind of not paying very much these days. So
there you go.
This is good.
Well, good luck to you.
So this was fun.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Do you want to go over and look at the schoolyard?
Do you have time?
Yeah, I can
sure.
go over there.
It'd be great to see it in person. After the interview, we went over to the abandoned school. I guess it's not really abandoned. It's just an unused building with a large lot. We went in and checked that out. It looks like the perfect place. And you can see a picture of Susan on our website at thesprocketpodcast.com. And if you want to go see what she's up to, check out bicycleridingschool.org, just like it sounds, all one word. We'll be back with another new show next week. And with more interviews from my Boston friends next week as well. We couldn't do any of this without the generous support of our donors. Thank you so much for giving your support. If you want to help join and you haven't yet contributed, you can check us out on Patreon. We are there, and there's a link to the Patreon site on our website, thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us some email, thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Twitter is Sprocket Podcast. Our phone number is 503-847-9774 for SMS or voicemail messages. And our music is from Ryan J. Lane. We'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.